You're listening to Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family. Welcome to Sleep Stories for Equestrians. I'm your host, Ashley Winch. We're so happy you're here to relax and unwind. If you fall asleep and miss the story, we will recap it at the beginning of the next episode. We've also selected and edited these stories for ultimate relaxation, removing any stressful bits without affecting the story's integrity, so you can focus on drifting off to sleep. With that, let's settle down and prepare for our story. The gates are closed. The horses sleep. The day's work done. The chores complete. Now let us rest, our bodies and minds. Drift off to sleep and close your eyes. It's time for us to turn down for the night. Now let's breathe in, breathe out, and turn off the light. One more time, breathe out, breathe in. Now, let us begin. On the last episode of Sleep Stories for Equestrians, the elf was preparing for her first horse show. Let's begin. My first horse show. At last, the opening day of the Great London Horse Show arrived, and Master took me, with Eros and Chanticleer, up to town to test our skill with the other horses. Although by this time I was 4 years old, I had never traveled by rail before, and at first I didn't like the sensation at all. But when I found that no hurt came to either me or my friends, I grew happier and thought only of all the wonderful things I should witness at the show. Eros and Chanticleer, who had both been there before, were a little superior in their manner toward me, but I tried not to mind this. Mother had always told me that great minds let little annoyances pass, and as I wanted to be really great, I tried to remember this very good advice, and I did not allow myself to grow irritable and cross when they would air their knowledge before me without actually bringing me into the conversation. When we arrived at the show, we were put into pretty boxes along with hundreds of other horses. Most of them were terribly frightened by loud noises of the band, the brilliant lights, and the never-ceasing buzz of talk from the human visitors at the show as they pressed backwards and forwards. Of course, none of us minded these various noises in the very least. Noise had never hurt any of us before, and we were so accustomed to all kinds of racket that we were really more amused than frightened. And I thoroughly enjoyed the music, although Chanticleer, who is always contrary, said it was poor. I soon spied my friend Invicta, but could not see either the Dandy or Zarina. The horse standing next to me, and indeed nearly all the horses I saw, had, instead of a long flowing tail like mine, only a little bare stump, not as long as one of my ears, and with but a few short hairs at the end. I thought I had never seen anything so thoroughly ugly. Even the Dandy had more left of his tail than nearly every one of these horses around me. Eros, Chanticleer, and myself had all been entered in the trotting class for young horses, and when the time came for us to show what we could do, Master did the only unkind thing he has ever done to me in my life. For he drove Eros himself and told Ricketts to take me, while another man named Evans took Chanticleer. The big doors at the end of the arena were thrown open, and in a moment we were in the ring, perfectly calm and steady, waiting with several other horses for the signal to start off. The race seemed over in no time. Eros won first prize, Chanticleer the second, and I only the third. During the excitement of the race, I momentarily forgot my grievance, but directly it was over, all my soreness of heart came back, and I felt sure I should have done better if only Master had driven me himself and had not left me to Ricketts. When I was again in my box and Master came to me and patted my head, I looked at him very sadly and tried to let him know how much he had pained me, and he seemed to understand and looked sad too. And then I felt I wanted to be friends, and I put my nose into his neck and nestled against him. Master and I loved each other too dearly to be at variance for long, and after all, we had taken all the prizes in that race and won a great honor for the family. And so I cheered up, though even now, I do think Master ought to have driven me himself at my first show, don't you, friends? Although I must acknowledge that Eros is both swifter and prettier than I. After the race, people came round to our boxes and petted and admired us, and my rather plaintive expression, intensified by the disappointment I had suffered, won for me so much sympathy and attention that by and by I felt a kind of heroine and grew quite contented and happy again. This horse show, as you know, lasts nearly a week, and we were much interested in all we saw and heard. One day, a horse began kicking because his harness touched his legs when he was being driven, and he had to be turned out of the ring in disgrace. If only he had a master like mine to train him, he wouldn't have been frightened by such a little thing. You remember I told you that Master often had the reins loosely tied around my legs when he played at horses with me. So if mine had happened to touch me in the ring, I should just have taken no notice. And neither would Eros nor Chanticleer have done. Amongst the visitors who came to look at us were the Dandy's friends, little Betty and her mother, and they both looked so pretty and smart. Betty was in a pale mauve coat with a little bonnet to match, while her mother wore a soft kind of dress of gray silky-looking stuff. I also recognized many of the people who came to the park to see dear Master. For a long time, I could not see Lord and Lady Durand, and then, just strangely enough, they both stopped just in front of my box. I heard Lord Durand say that both the Dandy and Tsarina had been entered for the tandem driving race, but that only the very day before the show began, Dandy had played up like anything while he and Tsarina were having a last practice. The trainer, it appeared, had lost his temper, and this had made my poor nervous friend make a sudden bolt into the air and then a mad, wild dash to get away. He had smashed up the little light cart to which he was harnessed and done serious damage to both himself and Tsarina, while the trainer was very badly bruised and shaken. "You must have been cut up about the accident, Durand," I heard one man say, while another chimed in, "I expect the flies worried the Dandy too, for the weather has been so very hot." This plain speaking evidently made Lord Durand very angry, for he answered sharply, It will be the last chance the dandy has to play up with me. I will let anyone who cares to buy him have him for a mere song. When I heard all this, I felt dreadfully sorry for my poor friend, and I did hope that someone patient and kind would buy him. Then, Lord and Lady Durand and their friends moved on without even giving me a glance. But I expect they were just too perturbed to notice. Just before we left the horse show, I heard a man, who was looking at me very hard, say to his friend, "That horse's tail is too long and very dangerous. If he happened to get it over his reins, he would kick like anything and run away." The friend replied, "Oh, that is one of Mr. Ingram's horses, and he has never been known to have a docked horse in his stables. He is considered, so I hear, one of the greatest authorities on horses and their training in both England and America, and I suppose in his influence over them and in his power to train, he has no equal. He never uses a whip, but he nearly does all his training by voice, and he cultivates the same influence in all his trainers. He says it's marvelous how quickly horses learn the human language, especially when it is kind, gentle, and persuasive, and combined with infinite patience and tact." Oh, how my heart went out to that man who spoke so nicely of my dear master, and I gave him a neigh to show my satisfaction and to confirm all that he said. But I am afraid I startled both him and the man who had criticized my tale, for they both gave a start, laughed, and then walked away. Presently, they walked past my box again, and they were evidently still discussing Master's wonderful training powers, for I heard the one who had already said a lot of kind things about Master say, "I remember hearing once a man in Mr. Ingram's employ, by mistake, harnessed two horses to a cart too short in the shafts for them. Directly, Mr. Ingram began to drive them, and they knocked their hocks against their cart. But except that they got a little frightened, nothing happened. They stood perfectly still at the word woe, and quietly allowed themselves to be taken out of the cart and harnessed to the right one. Now, if an English docked horse had gone through the same experience, he would most probably have kicked the front of his carriage into pieces, for generally if a horse happens to even once knock his hocks against the axle, he gets quite out of hand with fear and often does much harm in his great alarm." The two men moved on again, and I thought over the incident, which I well remembered happening, for I had heard Ricketts scold the offender well for his carelessness. The great show was over, and we returned to the park full of excitement and interest in all we had seen, done, and heard. I was very eager to recite all my experiences to the younger horses, but Eros and Chanticleer were quite blasé and wouldn't tell much of all that had happened. The importance of having something to tell gave me great joy, and I had many eager listeners, and much sympathy for having taken only third prize. The first night after my return from London, Minnie made a great fuss over me. So did Clasper and Nero, and they told me they had all missed me very much, which was really very nice of them. During our absence, two new dogs had arrived at the park, a big collie named Laddie and a cheeky toy pom called Gollywog because of his thick black coat. But I shall have more to say about them later. Thank you. for joining us on tonight's episode of Sleep Stories for Equestrians. Allow this tranquil music to carry you off to dreamland.